This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za. Learn something new and connect with like-minded contributors in health, wealth, and relationships. This is Power Lunch
with Bobby Molloy
on Power 98.7.
Yeah, that was very interesting speaking to Gerben Whittles here on Power Lunch. We'll put that conversation up as a podcast. But now, a different groove, managing a large garden. Now, this can both be rewarding and challenging, requiring a lot of things, right? Knowledge, dedication, and hard work. The sheer size of a large garden presents unique difficulties for gardeners, as it often involves extensive maintenance tasks such as mowing, weeding, pruning, and even pest control. And whenever we speak about gardening, we speak to the illustrious Joy Pala, Kitchen Gardens founder, who is a landscape designer as well. Joy, thank you very much for joining us. How are you keeping?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very well. I'm so excited about for what we're going to be talking about today. I think we've spoken a lot about small gardens.
Yes.
But not about big gardens. So I'm very excited for today.
Yes. I made a little joke when I was introducing this topic at the start of the show that, you know, we must be inclusive to those who also have big gardens, right? Because we're always talking about the small gardens.
Yes, because people have land out here.
Yes, yes. Be inclusive. I love it. So Joy, the land. What qualifies a garden to be called a large garden?
A large garden. Mm. Okay, so I'm going to try and bring it into the context of, I suppose, the size of gardens that I've worked on, right? And for me, large is anything 4,000 square meters and above. So between 4,000 square meters and 10,000 square meters. 10,000 square meters is a hectare.
Okay,
right?
Got it.
So now we're looking at, we're not just looking at areas close to the house, which is what you'll probably be looking at if you are in, say, for example, a property that's 1,400 square meters, a regular everyday home.
Okay.
But when you are blessed to have the land and you are dealing with thousands and thousands of square meters, what I find most of the time is that clients have this huge temptation to just lawn everything. And where you have, you know, it feels like such an easy, accessible solution, right? You really just get instant lawn and everything is green and you are not looking at a dusty soil that's, you know, supposed to be accompanying your newly built house.
Yeah.
And as easy as that sounds, it becomes a very resource-consuming garden.
Right.
If you're thinking about it, you'd literally be farming lawn at 10,000 square meters, right? At 10,000 square meters, imagine that. At 10,000 square meters with our kind of summer, you are looking at maybe spending about 20,000 liters of water a day.
Man.
Okay. So you have to then have either a borehole, some kind of additional water resource, because you also can't be relying on municipal water at 20,000 liters a day. You are just going to be paying rates and taxes on that house. That's all you're going to be paying. So how do you then walk into a space like that and then create something that's going to be sustainable, something that's not going to be, you know, consuming a lot of resources, something that you can also manage from a you know, emotional, mental, physical capacity?
Absolutely.
Are you able to then, you know, take on this additional property really into your resources? So that's what we're looking at today. And we are still going to be applying the same principles that we have been using when we're designing for small gardens. It's just now at a much bigger scale. And to avoid the overwhelm and the temptation to just lawn everything, number one, break up the space into different interesting spaces, right? Here we have an even bigger opportunities to enjoy the outdoors, right? Yeah. We are still going to keep the everyday things close to the house. I know I have clients who say to me, no, I want to be able to walk to my outdoor kitchen. I want to be able to walk to my bowl. I want to be able to walk to the pool, for example. And most of the time, it sounds very romantic when you're designing and you're thinking, oh, you know, here's an undulating path to the pool, and it's surrounded by all
Okay, what's the issue in actuality?
The issue in actuality is that if it's far, if it's things that you need to use every day, and they happen to be too far from the house, you're never going to use them.
All right.
So
okay.
Keep them as close to the house as possible. Mm. So you want to keep your pool close to the house. You want to keep your terraces where you're going to have maybe your outdoor dining or outdoor living areas much closer to the house. Mm. You want to keep your boma areas, right, much closer to the house. If you're having a men's conference, you want the men to be able to use the boma without having to think about traveling to the boma.
Right.
The other thing that we need to think about, especially for people who love to cook, is that your everyday kitchen garden, not the big vegetable garden, the everyday kitchen garden where you keep your herbs and your salads and small things that you can quickly, you know, step outside of the kitchen and access, those need to be much closer to the house, right? I love driveways that are interesting.
Okay.
I don't like straight line driveways. It give me an experience, right? So when you are going through your driveways that are winding down a path, winding down a road, are a lot more interesting than just a straight shoot from your gate into the garage. Give me an experience. Let me go around a pond. Let me go around a fountain. And also create, because you've got a big property, chances are you've got a very large home, right? You are also expecting to be entertaining quite a lot of people. So make sure that you have an auto court. An auto court is basically an area where your guests can park. An auto court.
Is that auto like motor?
Motor.
Auto and then court.
Yes.
Okay.
Court.
You are teaching me new things. Okay.
Have an area where your friends can park their cars and then still be easily able to walk to the house. The thing that you want to avoid with an auto court is that you want to avoid putting it right in front of the house, because you don't want to arrive to a parking spot. You want to arrive to a garden. Have an auto court and maybe a smaller walkway to an entrance garden of the house, right?
Yes.
Think about the surfaces in your garden space. Are you going to, number one, we're avoiding just lawning everything, right? Mm. So now we're looking at combinations of surfaces. We're looking at perhaps a little bit of grass in terms of the lawn. We're also looking at things like gravel gardens, right? We're looking at things like an open body of water. And an open body of water can be a very ecological thing to include in the garden, even if it's like a small pond.
Yes.
Or a slightly bigger dam, right? Maybe you want to be able to raise fish in that dam. I love the idea of that being not just an aesthetic thing, but also being something that is very ecological, very sustaining, something that birds, bees, butterflies can drink from, because that's the other thing that helps the garden to be more sustainable.
Yes.
If you can create a bit of a habitat, then you will struggle less with pests and disease and that sort of thing.
Of course, because we think we must come in and wipe everything out.
Yes,
but actually, it all helps us. Yeah,
it all helps us. If everything is in balance, then the garden works much better, and then it consumes less resources.
Yeah.
Going back to the idea of lawning everything, the most of the time, what I will find is that you will have lawn, but you will not have enough trees. And not enough of other plants as well, right? And you would think it's a solution. You think, oh, if I have too much plants, then I have to maintain and then I have to do this. But actually, less plants in the garden means more resources have to be used. So a lawn that is not bordered by trees, it will be an open lawn. It will be a lawn that's very thirsty. Because as soon as you put lawn, trees around the lawn, for example, you've already almost created a microclimate. Because, you know, when the sun comes up, certain areas are going to be in the shade. In the afternoon, certain areas might be in the sun. So because you've altered the climate of that environment, it means that it's not as hot. It also means that the more plants you have, because remember, plants also store water in their roots, right? So every time it rains, they will store water in their roots. It means that there is less pressure on your water resources in terms of the garden.
These are really important things to think about: design, cost and maintenance, the ecology, and so what you develop and put into your garden as a result of that. Let's take it a couple of steps back. This is something that we often see: huge land, but the soil is just not healthy. So let's talk a little bit about testing soil and steps to improve and maintaining healthy soil in general.
If you walk through and it feels like nothing grows, if you walk through and it feels like nothing grows, then you have an issue, right? And it's probably very important to then have your soil tested. But most of the time, and especially in an area zoned for residential occupancy, as soon as you see grass, any sort of grass growing, it means everything else that you're going to put in that garden is going to do well. Majority of the time when we don't have healthy soil is probably because during the development, the topsoil gets removed, right? Sustainable developers will remove the topsoil, but they'll pile it somewhere in the back. And then when they're done creating, building the house, they will put the topsoil back on. So most of the time, if you walk in and the topsoil has been removed, then you have an issue. Then in that case, I would say bring back some kind of topsoil so that you are starting with topsoil and not subsoil. Subsoil is not the most nutritious. Topsoil is that one that has a lot of organic matter. It's the one that's most nutrient dense. It's the one that really the plants are going to rely on for water storage, for nutrition. So if you're starting with subsoil, just have a look and you will see. Topsoil is a lot darker. Subsoil will be lighter. Sometimes the soil has been stripped so much that you start seeing more rock than soil. Or it's just soil that's very, very sandy. If you have an extremely sandy soil, it's better to add a lot more compost in that soil because the compost will aggregate all those soil particles. If you have a very clay soil, like people that live in the North Cliff, for example, the soil is very clay, still add quite a bit of compost so that it opens the pores of that clay. When you water, water will stay in the soil a lot longer. So yes, it is important to do a soil test. It is not essential, especially for areas that have been zoned for residential spaces. But it is important to understand the kind of soil that you're working with. I think that is very key. Do you actually have topsoil or are you just working with subsoil, right? Is your soil sandy or is your soil more clay? That's another issue that you need to look at. Yeah, absolutely.
Vital. And then finally, garden styles that are effective at reducing maintenance. I mean, you mentioned being cautious and careful about what you plant where and how, and lawn being a big guzzler. What's the final tip you can give us, Joy?
Gardens that are informal, as in they look natural, right? The more natural the garden looks, the less maintenance it's going to be. So think about gardens from the Bridgertons. If you've watched the Bridgertons, of course you've watched the Bridgertons. So those kind of gardens, those are what we call formal gardens.
Right.
So, very crisp, clean lawns, hedges, everything is, very big on geometry in terms of everything being shaped and clipped, right? So that's what we call a formal garden. An informal garden, it just sort of looks like it happens. Lots and lots of ornamental grasses. Very, very good. If you're wanting a grass look, but you don't want to go with lawn, right? That's the other thing to consider. So yes. Ornamental grasses, a lot, make that the majority of the planting, and then you add on some wildflowers. Right. And the more indigenous you go in your planting, the less water resource in the future your garden will require. So an informal garden, if you think about an informal garden that looks like it just happened,
yes,
there, even if you have weeds, for example, they just look like it's part of the arrangement.
The aesthetic is there. Yeah.
The aesthetic is there. So it requires less maintenance. There is a lot of work that gets done in August in terms of cutting down sure. grass and maybe doing some burning here and there. But it's not like an every week type thing that you have to go through.
Very interesting. This is wonderful. So all those who have the land, who have large gardens, I hope you feel included. That we're not just Goody Fletting and in the tiny suburbs, Joy and I. We're talking to everybody. How do we get hold of you, Joy?
Instagram DMs are the best way. I'm available at Organic Kitchen Garden.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
That's Joy Pala, our landscape designer, talking to us about large gardens and some interesting management tools, designs and maintenance ideas to be able to manage a large garden.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.